Today is July 1st, also known as Canada Day. Every year I get a text message on July 1st singing O Canada from Rabbi Schwartz. And today, without fail, I was going to beat him to it, but I missed out. We're continuing on the mitzvah, the 15th mitzvah, according to the count that we'll be following, in the Torah, of not removing any part of the flesh of the any part of the Karban Pesach out of the house in which it is being eaten, which is a strange kind of mitzvah. One thinks about it. It's different where if you have a mitzvah. You have a mitzvah to eat matzah. There's no requirement to eat it in a specific place. There's many mitzvahs. Yes, many mitzvahs. And yet, they don't have a specific restriction as to where one should eat it. And so, we saw that the whole point is that we became, as we saw from the Sefer HaChinuch, that through the exodus from Mitzrayim, we became noblemen. We became aristocratic and royal people. And that made us exclusive. So first of all, people that enjoy the luxury of royalty, they don't have to worry, as we mentioned, about the next meal, where it's going to come from, and so on. They're not thinking right now about what's going to be later. Leftovers is taboo in their dictionary, right? I was recently at a bar mitzvah. I just couldn't believe my eyes. It was a very wealthy individual who made this bar mitzvah, and the portions they served, one of the choices on the menu was a steak. I guess it was I'm not even familiar with these things, but it was probably prime rib or something like that. But it was an enormous steak. So they're serving this steak to adults and to children. The children sat down, and they started to eat this steak. And within a minute or two, they brought out some bowls of French fries or something like that. They went running for the French fries. And when they were done, they basically, when they were cleaning off the tables, I looked behind me at the kids' tables, and I saw the waiters taking away these plates with huge steaks, the size of which I've never seen before. And maybe a couple of pieces were eaten from each one out in the trash. Now, as a not a very wealthy person myself, to say the least, it jarred me, you know. Now, aside from the fact that it's a waste, and that in itself is has its own problems, but just the concept of not, you know, not really caring, not really planning in advance for such a thing, you know, not really. I don't know if there's any way to avoid it. You know, that's the way people are. But the fact is, people who are wealthy, people who are who live in royalty, it's not a matter of concern to them. They have their personal chef and they have their food, and they're not concerned at all about what's going to be tomorrow and so on, and you know, planning that you shouldn't have anything go to waste, etc. My grandmother is always very very much in favor of being careful with food, not to throw out food and so on. That the Rebbe Shlom gives us, you know, he's benevolent enough to give us not just enough to eat and not just enough to survive, but delicious food and abundance of food. And it's never been where food is so easily come by as it is today in our land, certainly. And there are people starving, obviously, elsewhere. It's a shame. It's a shame to throw it out. And one thing she says is that when she was a young girl, she says somebody would walk down the street and they had a loaf of bread. Your eyes would like today you see like a Lamborghini or something. Your eyes fall like that. It draws attention. Like somebody walked around with a bread. It was an item of note, which is tremendous commentary today. You could walk into a supermarket out of the 25 different brands that you'll have, there'll be at least one that's on sale for 99 cents for a loaf like that you barely can't fit in your shopping cart, right? So the point is here, at least, that people of royalty have this tendency not to have to worry about the future. Now, we'll begin now a piece from Rav Hirsch, which really is an extended, a longer piece. We don't have the time, we don't have the liberty to go through the entire piece, but the basic gist we have. And in his inimitable way, Rav Hirsch points out something about this mitzvah and about the details and the requirements for this mitzvah, and brings it to life in a way that it sort of underscores not just the importance of the mitzvah, but the pivotal place or the pivotal experience that we were going through at that time. It was a transformation, as we've said many, many times. Many of the mitzvahs reflect the beginning of a new life, the beginning of a new era, and nationhood in a certain way that we didn't have before. So this sort of this mitzvah and the details of this mitzvah are sending a message to Klal Yisrael about how Hashem wants us to view and how he views the structure of the Jewish people, which is not something that would strike you immediately when you first see this mitzvah. Okay, it's different. Bezach is it's a fundamental mitzvah, but the detail of the fact that you shouldn't take some out of your house, what does that do? But Rav Hirsch, always finding the deeper meaning in the mitzvah, as is his usual way, will go through this piece, will give us tremendous insight and further dimension to this, to the mitzvah and to the perspective that Hashem has of the structure of the Jewish people. And he says like this: Hare meirosh nikva oifia shel mitzvah Pesach. The nature of the mitzvah of Karban Pesach initially is something that the Torah teaches us by way of the details of the mitzvah. It teaches us about binyan habayis hayehudi v'kidushai. It tells us a tremendous amount about the design of the bayis hayehudi, of the Jewish home, v'kidushai, and its holiness. Now, you know, we have expressions in Tanakh, beis Yisrael Baruch Hu, right? Beis Aron, Beis Halevi, right? A bias. What is a bias? So let us see. What place does a bias have? When the Torah teaches us about the mitzvah Pesach, it says like this: Lo yechidim v'le hamayinam. The Torah does not desire specifically individuals, and not even on a national scale, that the nation itself did one Karban Pesach. It wasn't a Karban Pesach for one person, and it wasn't a Karban Pesach for the nation as a whole. Ela batim. Hashem specifically expected us to perform this mitzvah in groups, smaller groups of what would be called batim. Batim doesn't necessarily have to mean a husband and a wife. It could mean a group of people. But it means anashim shenisachdu bekvutzais mishpacha. People that gathered together as a group, as a mishpacha, as a family. And he says, "Heim heim ha'yisoid she'olav b'ina Hashem es amai." This is the foundation on which Hashem created and founded the Jewish people, His nation. Bate Yisrael heim ha'matara. The houses of Klal Yisrael, the families of Klal Yisrael, is the goal of the main goal. Ha'yikaris l'hashgachasei v'adrachasei ha'bilti nechleshes. The main idea that the Rebbeinu Shem has for the Jewish people is to have groups of people. Each one will soon see with their individual strengths. And that is the way the Rebbeinu Shalom provides for us with his hashgacha, his watchful eye, and his never-ending watchfulness over the Jewish people. V'chol ben Yisrael mitzdarif l'tzoyin marisoi ke'echad m'bnei abayis. Each one of the Jewish people doesn't contribute as an individual towards the nation as a whole. There's a step first, that you first contribute as part of a group, as part of B'nai HaBayis, as part of a home. In other words, there's smaller groups. It's not just a bunch of individuals, and it's not just one nation. There are groups. Now, let's see. He'll explain this a little better. Zayis chukas ha-Pesach. These are the statutes of the Karban Pesach. Now, he's quoting the Pasuk. It's an unusual wording for a mitzvah. Zayis chukas. Not too many places in the Torah where it says Zayis chukas. These are the statutes of, right? It says Zayis chukas ha-Torah by the Paraduma. And we spoke about that, how there's a correlation between those two mitzvahs. We spoke at length about that. But what he's saying is that this is a reflection. This wording of Zayis chukas ha-Pesach is a reflection on the fundamental nature of this mitzvah. What does that mean? Chayik zeh bo lekvaya es ha-tchunos ha-ishiyos. This chayik, this statute, this mitzvah comes to establish the tchunos, the characteristics, the personal characteristics, shehein t'nai lechaburas b'bayis ha-yudi. In order to participate as a group, as a bias within the Jewish nation, which then contributes communally, but when you want to participate in a smaller group of Klal Yisrael, first of all, there's a prerequisite, al chaver l'shtayach lebris ha-yehudis, like you would have smaller groups of any organization, lahavdil. You may have an organization of doctors, of a particular type of doctor. You have, radiologists. So you'll have the Philadelphia Association of Radiologists. So there'll be a group of, now, what do you need to do in order to be a member of that group? You have to have certain credentials, right? But then that group would then be part of a greater association across the United States or across the world, whatever it may be. So Lahavdil here too, we have to associate ourselves with a group, but in order to qualify to be part of that group, number one, we have to enter into a bris hayehudis leumis im Hashem. We have to be part of the greater covenant of the Rabbanim Shalom. In other words, we have to really be people who, as we mentioned in the past, are fully, as we mentioned earlier in the previous mitzvah, we are fully engaged, we're fully associated and fully bought into the bris, the covenant with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not enough. I'll accept to have a bris milah, or I'll do certain mitzvahs, I'll keep some of the mitzvahs of the Torah. You have to be fully, fully engaged and fully participatory with the entire Torah. And if it means even you can't fulfill many of the mitzvahs, you actually... your desire is to fulfill them, and you seek out every moment, every opportunity that you have to fulfill those mitzvahs, and those mitzvahs that are not relevant to you because you're not a kohen, or you're not a woman, or you're not a whatever mitzvah it is that you have to, you know, you're not a farmer, you're not a whatever it might be. Those mitzvahs, at least you learn about them, or you think about them, etc. Yes.
And part of this verse is learning Hayom at the Kolel.
Learning Torah is absolutely. Absolutely, and we mentioned that specifically in a more detailed way, is when you learn about mitzvahs that, like, here's a situation where we're learning about a mitzvah that is not relevant to us, to unfortunately right now. Bezus Hashem, this coming year, Lashon Haba B'Yerushalayim. But what are we doing? We're studying a mitzvah that really has no relevance to us right this moment. It's not even Pesach now, right? But the idea is that we recognize the value of every single mitzvah and how it contributes to the greater picture and how it's essential to us and how our participation with the mitzvah and our understanding of the mitzvah and our pursuing the mitzvah and learning about the mitzvah is all part of that greater covenant with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So number one, you have to be part of the bris ha-yehudis. You have to be, your intention has to be to pursue the Torah as much as you can. Now, mitzad Yehudam va'erech hayehem, the different ways people have different tendencies and different ways of different lifestyles. Ba'al gufam, so besides for that, number one is you have to be part of the covenant and pursue the covenant. Ba'al gufam yehemut v'chaysim brizu, you also have to have a bris milah. That's one of those mitzvahs where it says here, very unusual, that if you don't have a bris milah, you can't participate. right? It doesn't say that if you don't have a bris milah, you can't put on tzitzis. You can't put on tefillin. It doesn't say that, right? But here we're saying, because this mitzvah is so fundamental in conveying what it means to be part of the bris, and it's so fundamental to our connection to Hashem and the structure of the Jewish people, etc. So without being fully involved and fulfilling all the credentials, all the criteria necessary to be part of this bris, even if it's an einus, by the way, even if it's not your fault. If you don't have, a person would have liked to go to medical school, but what could he do? The fellow Nebuch, his wife got sick and he couldn't, his mother got sick and he had to take care of her. Whatever it might be, whatever it might be, he wasn't able to participate in the bris milah as he would have liked. So, it's an einus. What is it, his fault? It's not his fault. But you need to have it. In order to be part of this mitzvah, you need to have it. So that's number one. You have to pursue and have emuna in all the mitzvahs, as we mentioned. Number two, you have to have a bris milah. Ki kishem shechavetz Hashem lirayis hatzibur rak kishetakvu bebatim. The same way the Rebbeinu Shalom wants that our connection to the tzibur, to the communal, to the greater Klal Yisrael, should first be in the form of smaller groups. Kein bikesh Hashem lirayis habayis. While it's true that we have to participate in smaller groups, at the same time, those smaller groups, the main focus of those smaller groups and the main goal of those smaller groups is for the communal, for the Jewish people entirely. So it's small steps. It's not us as individuals. We participate in a group, and that group then comprises many of those groups together comprise the mosaic, the entire picture. Now, it's really true if you look around Klal Yisrael at any given moment, there are many different groups, many different stripes. You have Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, you have women, you have children, you have. But your first step is to recognize your place in which group you're in, and it could be classified in different ways at different times and different situations, and you can graduate from group to group. Once you're a Levi, you can't become a Kayan, but once you're a Yisrael, you can't become a Levi. But if you're a Katan, you could become a Gadol. If you're a minor, you could become a... But things can change, right? So, number one, you have to be part of this smaller group, which requires these prerequisites. And number two is that group itself should also be a component of a greater picture, which is all of Klal Yisrael. It could be either a Jewish family or a group of people on a smaller scale of friends together. That in the chabur is not restricted to families, right? It's any smaller group that may have some connection to each other. In this particular case, it might be that they're all living in the same place, or they all happen to be friends with each other. They all learn together, whatever it might be. But the main point here is not just a direct contribution from the individual to the klal. There's a step. The step is that we should be part of a smaller group. Now, he says like this, Al yeh habayis yechida b'ydedes, this bias, this group, should not be isolated and it should be connected rak la'atzma. It should only have a connection to itself. Ela kol bayis hu mokaim mata bay ruchay halu'umis. There's a tendency, there's a striving and the focus and the central... the magnetic pull should be tafkidei haleumi shel haklal yituvchu v'yagiu lidei hashlamasim. Did I skip a line there? The main point is that we contribute to our smaller group, but then from that group, our group itself contributes to Klal Yisrael as a whole. Lochein yitztaref l'bayis rak hameshtayach l'uma. Therefore, even though this smaller group is for us individuals itself, so we may have something in common. We live in a particular city, for instance, right? But it's not enough that we have something in common amongst ourselves. That group itself has to have as its main focus the pursuit of contributing to Klal Yisrael as a whole. V'ulam atafkid al-umi ha-kailo hu gadol umeguvin. The purpose of the Jewish people, the goal of the Jewish people, is something that has many, many facets. Which means to say, we cannot, being that there is a necessity to be contributing towards the greater nation, one can't forget that in order for Klal Yisrael to fulfill its purpose, we need to have individuals and even individual groups, each one with strengths. And that meaning to say, we can't ignore the fact that different folks, different strokes, yes? But it's not just we can't ignore it, we have to recognize that it's essential in order to have the beautiful picture, the beautiful mosaic that you have. It's only when you have so many different colors and so many different types and stripes contributing to that broader picture. Every bias, every group has to contribute al pi darkahu, according to its way, whatever resources that bias has, birav gavaniyosan, with its many colors, literally, but it means to say any resources, whether it be personalities, whether it be talents, whatever it may be, mitzad oifi tchunais kishrein, it be intellect, mamad or stature, whatever it may be, where you live is also, you know, if you're lucky enough to live in a particular place and therefore you know the language and you're able to converse, let's say you live, for argument's sake, you live in Washington, D.C., so you're able to, you know personally some of the politicians, you're able to affect people that way. There's so many different, whatever the case may be, the fact that there is individualism and the fact that there is communalism, these two things are not at odds with each other. They're both necessary. He says, Shneim, haklali v'hamayuchud, yishtifu p'ulo zem zeh, they both should contribute together, toicha amokas, hayichudis, haklalias, kam yachad, v'kach yizka yud halu'umi l'ismali b'shleimusei. And the only way to fulfill the real purpose of Klal Yisrael is to have both the communal in mind, as well as the individual strengths. This is something that's really, really, really crucial. You know, recently I'd heard a Rav in New York. He spoke. It was at my son's graduation, and he said over from Chazal that the Rebbeinu Shalom has a goal for every single Jew. He said that, this rabbi said, he was recently speaking in Lakewood, in the yeshiva in Lakewood. In Lakewood, there's, I don't know, 7,000-8,000 Talmidim. Now, the way they identify the Talmidim, the students, is if you bring in, let's say, private svarim, or you bring in your hat, or you bring in, just to write your name, there could be 20 people with the name Moshe Berkowitz, right? So what they do is, at the beginning of the year, they give each person, I'm sure they do this, Lahavdil, in the colleges too, where they have thousands of students, they give you a barcode. And they give you a sheet of labels, and you put them in all your svarim on the outside, and you put, so if a sefer gets lost, you don't know where it is, or you find the sefer, you don't know who had it, doesn't have a number in it, whatever, you go to the office, they scan it, and they give you the guy's information, and you get it to him. Put it in your hat, you put it in your jacket, whatever it may be. So his expression was, this rabbi, he said, you're not just a barcode. That's not what Yiddishkeit is about. It happens to be, it's effective and it works to give out barcodes, but that's not what we're about. Exactly this point. Every person contributes to Klal Yisrael something, some talents, some, many things. Talents, accomplishments, experience, whatever it may be, every Jew's purpose in life is an essential part of the Jewish people, and even the greatest gadol in the nation cannot accomplish. You might think that he could do a better job at giving a shir than you, or you might think, here, a perfect example, something we mentioned way back, which is sometimes you can have somebody who's such a big talmid chacham, he's so brilliant that it's hard for him to articulate himself on a simple level. So you'll have people, let's say, that are beginners and they won't understand them. So it doesn't mean, just because he's such a big Talmud Chacham, doesn't mean necessarily that he can convey the Torah. And the same is with anything. If a person has certain talents, but he's so, so sophisticated, you know, doing the basics of that profession is too mundane to me, can't manage to do it for an extended period of time. So you need somebody who's less talented. Whatever the case may be, the individual strengths, certainly of each person, and even of each group, of each community, of each house, of each group of friends, whatever it may be, is all necessary. Kohanim need Yisraelim, and Yisraelim need Leviim, and Leviim need... Everybody needs everything. So you could be somebody who is entirely ignorant of Torah, but the fact is you're a Kohen, and it happens to be that Hashem's bracha flows through you to the Jewish people. If you're born a Kohen, that's a gift that you have that other people don't have. You could be the biggest tzaddik in the world, and you don't have that that gift, right? So everybody contributes something. We're very focused on the community, absolutely. Community is essential. But we also cannot lose sight of the fact that every human being contributes something and is irreplaceable in the greater picture of the entire nation. Yes?
The examples you're bringing up are relevant, easy to comprehend. There are much more difficult examples. For instance, there are those who are called Mishnagim by others, not by themselves. Mishnagim also need Hasidim. Sometimes we say, when this happens, Mashiach will be right, not we'll hear his footsteps, we'll see his footprints. But sometimes it's not so easy to see that.
Well, you know, the example that you give, for one, my personal feeling is that, and I could be wrong, but my personal feeling is that looking back at history over the last couple hundred years, there are certain groups in Klal Yisrael that excel excessively in certain mitzvahs and certain, right? Take the Hasidim, right? They excel in many things, but let's say one thing is they daven with hislavas. They daven with great, passion. That doesn't mean to say that there's no misnagdim who daven with great passion. There's many of them, thousands of them, okay? Or you'll take the misnagdim and you'll say, well, very often they excel in learning Torah. That doesn't mean to say that the Hasidim are not excelling in learning Torah. But in general, if one would try to pick one goal, one ideal that they stand for more so than other groups, every group has its ideal that would be the picture on their flag. And my personal feeling is, I assume that this is correct, is that the Rebbeinu Shlomo deliberately had these movements come to the fore as it did over the last couple hundred years, is to make sure that we remain in check. If everybody was the same and everybody was, we as a community, we would, as a nation, we would weaken and weaken and weaken in those areas, and there wouldn't be what we call the kinah seifrim, the kinah, the positive jealousy from somebody else who's accomplishing things in the realm of spirituality. So, for instance, it was essential for the Jewish people that there should be this sort of, I don't want to call it a rift. Unfortunately, there were negative elements to it as well. The fighting that went on and so on absolutely was a great detriment to the Jewish people. But on a certain level, it was very important for us. It was sort of a self, check and balance for the Jewish people as a whole, that we should all, there's a group that excels in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. They're pushing that, if nobody's out there pushing that a whole day, not necessarily that I buy into their ideology, I do or I don't, is irrelevant. The fact is there are people out there that are emphasizing a particular part of the Torah. It causes me, who's not necessarily part of that group, to want to strengthen myself in that area as well. I have a certain, jealousy of it, that they're excelling in that. Wow, I'd love to have that. You go into a place where they're really davening you walk into a Hasidish shtibel and they're like the passion of their davening and their sincerity. I wish I could. There are plenty of places in a Litvisha place or in a Misnagdisha place, whatever you want to call it, where they daven like that too. But that's not what they're known for. You have a certain, I want to be like that too. So as a whole, the Jewish nation as a whole, it's essential for us to have all those different stripes. Not to say that there aren't negative things that come of it too, but exactly what you're saying, the need, maybe it was a greater need later in the history of the Jewish people than it was initially, to have all these, you know, diverse stripes. It just sort of helps us, it encourages us to grow in our own way. And that's really what we need to do when we meet up with people and we coexist. We try to coexist with others, is to see the beauty in the ways of the other people. I'll tell you what the Vilna Gaon says. The Vilna Gaon says, I'm sorry, you said Misnagdim. You're right that they're not called Misnagdim. They don't call themselves Misnagdim. The Vilna Gaon loved every Jew, I'm sure, and every Chassid loved the great Chassidish masters loved every Misnagdim too. That we make it into a, right? But he said like this, unbelievable. The Pasuk says like this. The Pasuk says, Kimayim panim el panim, kein leiv adam el adam. As the reflection of a face in the water, mayim in the water, in the mayim, panim el panim, face to face, kein leiv ha'adam al adam, so too is the heart of one person to another. Which means whatever you're feeling towards somebody else, the simple explanation is, you want to know what that person is feeling towards you. If you're feeling angst towards that person, more than likely that's the way they're feeling towards you. Very seldom that you're really not on the same line. You may not always admit it. You may not be feeling it, but you might be aware of it. Fine. Said the Vilna Gaon like this. Unbelievable pshat. When I look at another human being, yeah? I look at you, Michael, yes? My right eye is seeing which one of your eyes? The left eye. And my left eye is seeing your right eye. The tendency of a human being, says the Vilna Gaon, being that we are always jealous of our friends, the tendency of a human being is that with my right eye, which represents my stronger vision, I magnify the left side of my friend, which means his weaknesses. Okay? Even if you're a lefty, the left represents the weaknesses, yes? Yad keha, yeah? With my left eye, which is my weaker vision, I tend to minimize the right side of my friend, which is his strengths. The one exception where you do not see the opposite side of your friend is where? When you look at your reflection. When you look in the water at your reflection, or a mirror for that purpose, what do you see? Your right eye sees the right eye, and your left eye sees the right. Says the Vilna Gaon, you know how a leiv ha'adam el ha'adam should be? You know how my heart should be towards my fellow man? Not like I'm looking at them in real life. As a reflection in the water or in a mirror, my right eye should see, should magnify, should look with very strongly at his strengths. And my left eye should minimize his frailties. His left side. That's the way we should be. So I'm telling you, Reb Gavriel, bring up a very important point. But the fact that there are differences in the Jewish people, we have the opportunity through that, to the contrary, to learn from them. To look at them in a way where you're focusing strongly and magnifying their strengths, and you're minimizing greatly their weaknesses. That's really, by the way, as a parent, what a person does, or as a good friend of someone else, that's exactly why you could tolerate so much more from them, is because you have a tendency to minimize. I mean, I'll tell you, I would give a speech, and then my friend would give the very same speech, and my mother would hear the two speeches, and she would think mine is the best in the world, and my friend's is okay, because it's her son, right? Now, that's really the way it should be for the Jewish people as well. I just want to point out, before we conclude, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has an unbelievable piece in Parshas Bamidbar about the, when it speaks about the flags of the Jewish people, each one had a, it's a very risky thing that each one should trumpet their own stripe, you know, their own. We should all be the same. And the truth is, essentially, it is problematic when people try to show that they have something over the other and I have my uniqueness, etc. But says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, an unbelievable thing by the Degolim. There he says this. He says, this happened. Hashem gave out these flags and taught us to appreciate our uniqueness each one's respective uniqueness, happened after the Torah was given. And after there was a Mishkan, which the Ramban learns is a recreation of Matan Torah, when you have something like the Torah, or like the Mishkan, as your central anchor, as your central focus, and that's what you strive for. You strive to increase your participation in spirituality, to grow in Ruchnias. When that's your sense, and everything you do is through the prism of how can what I'm doing now contribute to the greater nation? How could it contribute to greater Kedusha for myself, for people in Klal Yisrael? When that's your motive, then the individuality is a benefit. It doesn't detract one person from the other. To the contrary, you're going to say, I'm going to use my resources and I'm going to use my strength to help encourage the other person. Let's say I'm a wealthy person, I can help somebody. If I'm a poor person, I have, let's say, I have words of encouragement that I can offer them that is very valuable to them, and they would maybe dismiss coming from a rich, wealthy person because the wealthy person is, he wants to run for office. Whatever, right? There's always something that you can contribute. So sometimes people view the words of poor people as more genuine. Whatever it may be, any resource, any talent, anything that you can contribute could be used in a positive way. It could be used in a negative way. If our central focus, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, if that's what my goal is in everything I do in my life, is to contribute to greater service of Hashem in the Mishkan, to greater holiness, then what I can contribute individually with my unique resources is going to help, it's going to encourage, it's going to uplift my friend. It's not going to be detrimental to him. And that's why specifically after the Torah was given, and specifically after we were given the commandment to have a Mishkan, only then did Hashem introduce this idea of each one having a flag and each one, so to speak, flaunting their greatness, because the purpose was not to say, I'm better than you, but to the contrary, I have something that I could help you with. And when that's the perspective, it's an entirely different situation. And that's exactly what Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch is saying, that we have to recognize, and he's going to go to in a drop more in depth, but we have to recognize that it's not just each individual contributing to the nation as a whole directly, but first we have groups. And the groups, each one may have its own stripe, Hasidim, Nesnagdim, Litvish, and Sephardic, and Yemenite, and all different stripes. They're all, if the intent is to contribute each one to the other, to help uplift the community as a whole, then our nation will be an extremely strong one, and we won't be missing even one particle, which is essential. Each particle is essential to the beautiful mosaic that it creates in the end of the day. Exactly like a symphony. We were going to get to that story with the we'll get to that tomorrow.